Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your patience. This is Kara Evans, president of Oral Roberts University's Young Republicans, College Republicans.
Thank you all so much for coming out here. This is an amazing crowd, and I'm so proud that Tulsa came out here to support Mr. Santorum and to come listen to him speak. I'd like to invite anyone here who would like to register to vote to go to our table in the back of the North Lobby. We have registration forms there for you to fill out, and this is for anyone no matter what your party affiliation is. So please be looking for the ORU College Republicans table in the back lobby. I would like to introduce Matt Pinnell. He is the youngest chairman in the history of the country for the Oklahoma Republican Party. He was elected June 26th in 2010 and re-elected in May 2011. He's also a proud ORU alum, so please help me welcome Matt Pinnell.
Thank you all. Somebody's got a little momentum going in the presidential race. I am Matt Pinnell. I'm the chairman of the Oklahoma Republican Party, and I can tell you that our number one goal, along with the 49 other state chairmen around the country, above all else, number one is making Barack Obama a one-term president. And when the Santorum folks reached out to me and we were going to do events in both Oklahoma City and Tulsa, obviously as a proud Golden Eagle, I said we're going to do it at the most world-renowned Christian university in the country. And if the New York Times or anyone has a problem with that, they can email me at mattidontgiverip.com. At this time, I'm going to be introducing the man that's going to introduce the senator who is here with us this afternoon. And again, it's a great honor to be able to introduce the president of ORU who has been able to put that, quote, the new ORU into practice, President Dr. Rutland.
Thank you, Matt. Oral Roberts University is a world-renowned Christian university located right here in the heart of America. We offer 64 undergraduate majors in a multitude of disciplines. Two specifically important academic programs to this event are government and pre-law. ORU is honored to have Senator Santorum join us for this town hall sponsored by the greatest college Republicans club in this or any parallel universe. The political process in the United States of America is sometimes rowdy, frequently complicated, and sometimes even hard to understand. Our own Will Rogers said one time, "Thank God that we don't have all the government we paid for." But it is appropriate for a world-renowned university to be supportive of the governmental process by offering these kinds of academic forums, and we are proud today to sponsor this one. Former U.S. Senator Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania was elected to the United States House of Representatives in 1990 at the age of 32. He still looks 32. And from 95 to 2007, served in the United States Senate. In 2000, he was elected by his peers there to the position of Senate Republican Conference Chairman. Rick and his wife of 21 years, Karen, are the parents of seven children. Please join me, will you, in welcoming Republican presidential candidate Rick Santorum.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you. Thank you. Please, please, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Professor Rutland. I appreciate Matt. Thank you, Kara. Thank you all for being here. And let me first, obviously, I know we just had a medical emergency, and I know that a prayer very appropriately was said here, and certainly I was back there and participating in that prayer, and we certainly wish the very, very best to the gentleman who is having a health problem, and I just want again to keep him in mind as we have this event that he came here to participate and see our government political process in action, and hopefully he came here to cheer us on, and so we're in that spirit. We'll continue to have this event and do so, and hopefully in our enthusiasm, hopefully give some positive energy and some prayer to him as he struggles in his health circumstances. So thank the folks here for saying that prayer and for recognizing that. Let me, as we get started here, introduce the other two people. You might have noticed a couple other people came out with me. We are... President Rutland mentioned we have seven children. Very proud of the fact that we have seven children, ages 20 to 3.5. And you know, Social Security and Medicare are a big demographic problem, and I'm doing my part to try to fix that problem. So I am a full-time servant of the people, trying to fix all the problems that we have in my personal life as well as my public life. But many of you know about our little girl, our youngest, little Isabella. We call Bella, and she went through a difficult health time about a week and a half ago, almost 2 weeks ago now, when I was fortunate enough, really blessed enough to be home when she got very, very sick, and we ended up having to take her to the hospital, and you put out a little notice. And usually you don't put out a notice when your child goes to the hospital, but it was one of those times where I was scheduled to be on the campaign trail, and just sort of not showing up is not something you can do when you run for president. And so you had to let folks know, and it turned out to be the greatest blessing to tell people that we had our little girl, had to get to the hospital. She was in an emergency situation, really a life-threatening situation. And the way this country responded, all across this country, people, you know, who don't agree with me on anything, and people who, many folks who contacted us who told me that they don't even pray, but they were praying for Bella. And it really touched me, and I just want to say to everybody here, thank you. Thank you for your prayers, and she has had a truly, for her, a miraculous recovery. She is doing just great. I'm going to get home. This is my last event before I get to go home and see Bella. So, and my wife and the kids. And so I just appreciate it. I can't think of a better send-off for the last week that I've had. I mean, Tuesday was a good night, but wow, this is amazing. With me are Isabella's two oldest, her oldest brother and her oldest sister, and that's my daughter Elizabeth and my son John, right over there. Well, I know this is a political event and an educational event, so we're gonna make this try to make this as interesting to everybody as possible. I know there are questions up here from the students here at ORU, and we want to have that interaction, Socratic method. So they're going to start, you know, poking at me on their questions, and I'm looking forward to that. Let me just share with you what I think this election is all about. I've been saying since 800 town meetings ago that I believe this is the most important election in your lifetime. And it doesn't matter how old you are. This is an election about big things. Yes, it's an election about an economy that is sick. Yes, it's an election about jobs that are not being created. Yes, this is an election about government debt and deficits that are choking this country. Yes, it's an election about the size and growth of government that is crushing American business and crushing your freedoms. Yes, this is an election about a president
who is allowing things to occur in the world almost apathetically, to rally forces that have been out there over the last few decades that want to do harm to America. And we have the audacity of calling it an Arab Spring. And what we see now is that Arab Spring is an icy, cold winter of radical Islamists. You hear much now about the hostages being held in Egypt. A year ago, would we even thought about that? No. A year ago, we didn't have radical Islamists in control of Egypt. And we had a president of the United States. Not only did he sit by and do nothing, but he sat by and encouraged the radical Islamists to oppose an ally of the United States and the state of Israel. And now those radical Islamists are imposing Sharia law. These radical Islamists are holding Americans hostages. And it's not just there, but it's in Iran. Yes, they're holding hostages in Iran to Americans. And they are building a nuclear weapon. And the president reluctantly fights with Congress just to do the minimum to try to slow them down. And then we see in Syria, the only reason the President of the United States withdraws our embassy from Syria, which he was the one that put in place to reward the thug Bashar Assad and his reign of terror over the people of Syria. We rewarded him by putting an embassy there. And the only reason we removed it is because they wouldn't guarantee the safety of the embassy, not because we wanted to pull it out as a sign of lack of support for this thug. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a President of the United States that on every single count, and I haven't mentioned the one, his slow dissemination of freedom of religion, freedom of conscience, standing up and talking about abortion as if it was something that denied that having life and being pregnant was something that would deny people their dreams. This callousness toward life and family and faith and even open hostility. This is the president of the United States today. This is a president who has a fundamentally different view of America than what made America the greatest country in the history of the world. That's why this election is so important. This is how the president acts when he's still up and subject to re-election. He still has to take political considerations into consideration. Imagine a President Obama with 4 years and no one to be accountable to. Imagine what he can do. Imagine what damage and destruction he can do internationally to our friend Israel, who stands and pleads with us to help. And what do? We send out the Secretary of Defense to tell the world that Israel is planning attacks and then condemns them and invites the rest of the world to do likewise. We have a President of the United States who already has successfully taken over the healthcare system in this country. And one of the things I talk about all the time, I wouldn't be in this race if it wasn't for Obamacare. If it wasn't for the fact that we have a system in place right now in America that is going to dictate to you your economic choices when it comes to healthcare. It's going to take away your freedom. It's going to tell you what healthcare plan you're going to have, how much you're going to pay, how much your employer is going to pay, what doctors you're going to be able to go to, what the limits in your insurance are. All of these things are now going to be dictated by the federal government, not by you, not by any choices. You're going to have that mandated to you. And that was one of the reasons it got me in the race, but there was actually more. I talked about this being a freedom issue. But the one I knew people would understand is the freedom to be able to interchange with the healthcare system the way you want it. But now we see that it's more than that, isn't it? If the government says they're going to give you a right, they can then tell you how to exercise that right. You see, our founders believed
Our founders believed that rights don't come from the government. They come from
the people.
Get your rights, which is what our country was founded upon. I always carry around, always look which pocket I have it in, my Constitution. This is the operator's manual of America. This is how America is supposed to be governed, by this document. And it was for over 200 years. We had this document, but there was another important document. By the way, this document revolutionized the world. This document was put in place to do really one thing, and that was to protect the essence of America. And the essence of America, the why of America, came in another document that happens to be printed. And if you have your pocket constitution, most pocket constitutions just don't print the Constitution, but they also print the Declaration of Independence. And in that Declaration of Independence is a phrase that you folks here in Oklahoma, and I know at Oral Roberts, you know that phrase. And that is, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their in certain unalienable rights, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is the essence of America. We are a country that believes in all people are equal. Now, we sort of take that for granted in America. Well, of course, everybody's equal. Even folks who see the Declaration of Independence as sort of an old dead letter, the folks in the progressive movement, the left, trying to ease out the Declaration of Independence. It's inconvenient for them, because it says that rights come from God instead of from the government. And in the world of the left, it's the government that gives you rights. And so they try to ease out the Declaration, but it's interesting, when it comes to the issue of equality, they're all for it. They use that term all the time, equality, equality. Where does equality come from? Do you find equality between men and women and different people in society in other cultures in America, in the world? No, you do not. No, you do not. You find it in Western civilization. You find it because we are a Judeo-Christian country. And you find it because the roots of equality come from the fact that we are all equal, not because Kara and I are equal. She is much better looking than I am. I'm taller than she is. That's about it. But we're not equal. None of us are equal from a standpoint of a humanistic point of view. What makes us equal is that we're equal in the eyes of God. We all have dignity. We all have dignity and worth because of that. So here we are as we accept equality, but we don't recognize where the equality comes from. We accept rights, but this administration doesn't remember where the rights come from. Our Constitution is here to do one thing, protect these rights. And as a result of that, we can have a country. We did have a country. And I believe today we still have a country that believes and functions best when we allow people to exercise these rights to do what? To pursue their dreams, to form families, to form churches, to form civic and community organizations, to build a network, a rich network of civil society, of people being connected with each other, to build schools. Look at this community. Look at this community. How knitted together this community is.
how much you receive and are nurtured, not from government, but by something that was built here, something that feeds you in more ways than one. The richness of what Americans built based on pursuing their dreams, pursuing one man's dream, pursuing a community's dream. Think about what transformation you have done in the lives of millions without the government. That's what America's about. That's the richness. That's why it's so hard, folks, to take what happened here in America and transplant it everywhere. Because what we did here was unique, was different. The French tried to copy us in the French Revolution. Oh, they had their constitution. But the watchwords of their revolution were three words: liberty, good. Equality, good. And fraternity, problematic. Because fraternity means each other, brothers, right? Brotherhood without fatherhood, without a creator. And when that happens, then rights don't come from God, they come from each other. And of course, once you have this radical document of freedom like our Constitution, and you give people the ability of self-government, and they have nobody to no rights they have to respect other than ones in which they give each other, then guess what? You get a guillotine. We have a president now who believes that government should be able to create rights and force you to exercise those rights in conformity with what they believe, not the rights that you have, the unalienable rights that you have. And that's why you see a church in America. I know it's the Catholic Church, but it's the Catholic Church first. It won't be the last if they get away with it. They say that you will. Not, here's the interesting part about this. We have an insurance policy that the federal government has said to Catholic Charities that you will provide free contraception, abortifacients, the morning after pill, and sterilization to the people who work for you. And if you don't, we will fine you $150 million. We're not suggesting that people who work for Catholic Charities can't go out and buy those things. They can. We're not banning them from buying it. We're not prohibiting them. We're just saying, they're just making someone who doesn't believe in those things pay for someone to do something which they consider to be a grievous moral wrong. If they can make you do that, if they get away with this, Barbara Boxer, I know I hate to say those words. I always say Barbara Boxer is like a dog whistle to me. I mean, I hear her talk, it's just boom. So she's out there, what she's saying today, she says the rights of women to choose trumps religious liberty in America. Folks, this is what they believe. They believe the rights of the Constitution. Well, those unalienable rights, you know, we are the ones who create the rights. And so when we talk about what's really important in our country, we talk about this growth in the size and scale of government, it's not just going to crush your economic freedom. You give government control, they will wield it. I always get a kick out of the talk, and I get this all the time. You're a moralizer. You're trying to impose your morality on us. What's that? What's that? What did they just do? You see, here's the interesting thing. Here's the real interesting thing. In America, based on the Judeo-Christian principles of Western civilization, practiced better here than any other country in the world, we are the most tolerant country in the world. Look at America. I mean, let's look at us. I mean, I know sometimes it's hard to look. You want to see diversity? You want to see tolerance of behavior? There's no place in the world where behavior is tolerant like this in this country. Except behavior that is against the radical secular ideals of the left. And then, particularly if you're a Christian, you are told, stop it. You have to be out of the public square. You have to do this in private. We now have both the Secretary of State and the President have referred to the freedom in the Constitution, the freedom of religion. They have repeatedly referred to it not as the freedom of religion anymore. You know what they refer to it as? The freedom of worship. Now, I don't know about you, but my religion goes beyond worship. What are you doing right here? What are you doing right here at Oral Roberts? You're practicing the freedoms that you've been given of religion to educate people consistent with the values of your faith. That is a freedom, not of worship, but it is a religious freedom, and an important religious freedom. Folks, this is a key election. And it's not just about the values I've talked about. It has an impact on everybody in America. Because what government is doing is getting bigger and bigger, spending an enormous amount of money, throwing us into immoral debt, crushing the business community in this country. We need someone to go out there and articulate a vision. A vision that says that we need not only to liberate the business community, which we need to do with lower taxes and less regulation, if we really want to get the business community going, one surefire way is to drive up energy production and lower the cost of energy in this country. I just want to remind you where that first oil well was drilled in America.
Oh, yeah.
No, it was not in Oklahoma. It's just about 40 miles up the road from where I grew up, a little place called Titusville, Pennsylvania. And I bet a lot of folks from Western Pennsylvania from those oil wells came down here to Tulsa. And we probably have a few Pennsylvania roots here in town. And we believe in Pennsylvania. We've seen it from the very early days of the energy industry. But we see it now, thanks to the great technology developed here of hydrofracking, we are seeing the gas industry in Pennsylvania explode. And as a result, cost of gas going down. You know, we have the cheapest natural gas in the world. $2.50. I know that gives heartaches to some folks in the industry. But because we have an abundance of domestic fuel, our gas, believe it or not, is
$2.50. In the Middle East, it's $15, $17. In Europe, it's about the same. In China, it's a little bit more. We have a huge economic advantage. And what are we doing with it? Trying to eliminate that advantage. The President of the United States is now going out and said, oh, well, we've got to be concerned about this new technology, hydrofracking. New technology? Last I saw, there was about 800,000 wells drilled in this country using this technology. But since the environmentalists have now been outed with the politicization of the science of this man-made global warming shtick, they've got to find a new fundraising tool. First it was ANWR, but now the president's taken that off the table. So they got to find hydrofracking. Why are they picking up? Because we're doing it now in the East. Well, that's maybe the other reason. See, we're doing it now near the population centers. So now we can bring, out here in flyover country to the elitist in Washington, if you do stuff out here, well, you know, how can we raise money on you folks out here in Oklahoma and Texas? But if we start doing it outside of Philadelphia and New York, whoa, dollar signs. We can now say, look at what's going on. You're going to ruin your water tables, and they're going to pollute your streams, and they're going to, all these horrible cat. This is the stick. Why? Why? Because they want higher prices. They want to control. They want power. They want the ability to be able to push their agenda, their radical agenda, on you. And they know that the higher the price is, the worse this economy is going to do. They don't believe that creation is here to serve man. They believe man is here to serve creation. And so as a result, we have a president of the United States who sides with them on everything. The Keystone Pipeline. How many pipelines are going through that section of the country? Hundreds. And now we have an opportunity to bring Canadian oil into this country, into Oklahoma, at a time when Mexico, which gives us about 1.5 million barrels a day, guess what? That's going to be wiped out in about 3 or 4 years. They're depleting to the point where they're not going to have that. Venezuela, it's 2.5. China's building a refinery in Venezuela for their heavy crude, and they're going to take all their gasoline. Alaska, within 10 years, maybe less. Their field used to be 2 million barrels a day. It's now down to 500,000. And if it gets down to 350,000, the pipeline shuts down. And we'll get nothing from Alaska. We don't open up ANWR, Alaskan oil will be gone. That adds up to almost, well, that's 4.5 million barrels a day. Plus, what is coming down from Canada now is going to be piped over to the West Coast and sent to China. Imagine what's going to happen to our oil industry in this country. Folks, we need to have a president that's on your side. It's on the side of affordable energy. Well, this race is about those big issues. Government control of the manufacturing and energy sector of the economy. Because energy prices drives manufacturing as well as energy. Same thing with healthcare. These are the big issues of the day, of government control of your lives. And we need someone who can go out there and articulate a message and a vision for a wealthier America, a freer America, America that believes in faith and freedom and family and small business and opportunity and those media and institutions that can build and regenerate a great and strong America at the grassroots so we can continue to build this country from the bottom up instead of a man who believes that when there's a problem that confronts us in America, that we solve it from the top down. And who would I offer to you as the best person to make that challenge? Who did not support a government-mandated health insurance program? Could it be the candidate who does not, as governor of Massachusetts, author the child that became the adult of Obamacare, Romneycare? I gave a speech in Rochester, Minnesota last week, where I laid out chapter and verse. I actually took the time and really started to study this. And it was amazing, the similarities between these two bills. Amazing. I don't agree with President Obama about very much, but when he says he copied Romney Care to make Obamacare, I believe him. And it's devastating in Massachusetts. Imagine now we have a candidate running on the most important issue of the day. The crushing economic impact, the crushing impact of reducing your economic freedom, the crushing impact of dictating to you how your faith and your speech rights will be impinged upon through Obamacare, and we put up someone who believes in Obamacare, but just at the state level, not the federal level. How effective an opponent would that be? How about someone who looks at the problems on Wall Street when it was melting down, and said, oh, let's get the government to go and repair it, like John McCain and Barack Obama did in 2008. Well, unfortunately, they were joined by Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich, but not by Rick Santorum. And finally, when it came to the politicization of science and man-made global warming, I did not sit on a couch with Nancy Pelosi ever in my life. For the record. Nor did I sign into law a provision that put carbon caps on power plants in Massachusetts. We need someone who can go out and talk about the message and not just say I'm for it now, but talk about what you believed in from the very beginning and create a clear contrast with Barack Obama. All right, now I'm going to take some questions from some of the students and we're going to have an opportunity to get into a few more issues.
Okay. Senator Santorum, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
Really amazing having you here. Believe it or not, I'm actually the president of the College Democrats here on campus.
Welcome. You probably feel like I felt as chairman of the College Republicans at Penn State.
Is that right?
The same thing.
You must be a warrior then.
That's right.
My name is Jonathan Townsend, and I'm born and raised here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Been at Oral Roberts. I'm a senior now. My question is relevant to your statements on healthcare. You've identified yourself as clearly the clear choice for those who vote based on values, family values, and especially values of the Catholic faith. But, however, you tend to... You express your ideal to repeal Obamacare, as you guys like to call it, the Affordable Care Act. And that's something that the Catholic Church, particularly the Pope, has really supported. He said that healthcare is a value and that healthcare is a human right. So with that being the case, And if you line it up with the Catholic faith and so many things in the Catholic Church, why not the Catholic Church in regards to healthcare, since it is a value and a human right?
That's a great question. Thank you. Here's the way I approach things as a public official. I believe that you have an obligation to approach every issue in public life from the standpoint, from the standpoint of both faith and reason. My conscience was formed as a result of my life experience. It was primarily through faith and through the moral values I was taught for the teachings within the Bible and the church. And so, yes, that I bring that to the table. That's who I am. That's, you know, when I look at things and I say right and wrong, I mean, that's where, you know, they're right out of where what the Bible teaches are right and wrong. But I have an obligation not just to look at things that way, but also to bring reason. I always say that if your faith is true and your reason is right, you'll end up at the same place. Why? Because, well, God created us, created the universe, created reason. And of course, why would God create something where reason would bring you one place and your faith would bring you another if your faith is true, right? So I also believe as a public official, you have an obligation to speak to people of faith and no faith. You have an obligation to present a reason why you want to advance a certain public policy. Not just because, well, I believe it's true because my faith teaches it. That's fine. But from the standpoint of a public policy, it's insufficient. Because you need to appeal to people who may not share your faith. And so that's why I look at the Affordable Care Act and say, both from the standpoint of faith, do I believe that people should have the opportunity to purchase health care? Yes. Do I believe it is the right that the government should impose and control? No. So there's one thing to say that that people should have the opportunity to have access to care. It's another to say that the government is the one that should be the implementer of that. And reason tells me that government is the least effective tool to make that the best possible.
Okay.
And we see this with in the case 3 years ago when the Catholic Bishops Conference came out and supported Obamacare. I was highly critical of them for doing so. And I said, careful what you wish for. And they are now all understanding that admonition as to careful who you lie in bed next to when it comes to the government and secularists who don't agree with your value structure.
Hi, my name is Micah. I was wondering if you could briefly explain the differences between your views on foreign policy and Ron Paul's and why you view the way you do.
The briefest way is I believe in peace through strength. He doesn't. I believe that America is the source of stability in the world, which is the greatest benefactor of that is the United States and us. And that if we in fact do what Congressman Paul has suggested, which is to isolate ourselves, to withdraw from the world, I think we've seen that there are forces in the world that would replace us that would not have our best interest in mind. And there wouldn't be a vacuum. There would be someone else to replace. And in the Middle East, who would it be? Well, it's pretty obvious what's on the ascendancy in the Middle East. In the Far East, it's pretty obvious who's trying to exercise their muscle in the Far East. In Europe, it's pretty obvious who's trying to reestablish themselves as the force in Central Europe and maybe beyond. Africa, who knows? It's obvious in South America that China is and Russia are, and even some of the Islamists are trying to make plays in our own hemisphere as we sit by and idly watch and do nothing. So Congressman Paul's, people have asked me, would you vote for Congressman Paul given his national security positions? The answer is yes, because I believe after this election, if Barack Obama was reelected, his foreign policy would be Ron Paul foreign policy. I think he would become much more radical in his cuts in the military and bringing people home and disengaging from the world and allowing the world to go to seed. And let me assure you, it will go to seed. And the virulence that will be rampant, like a bacteria that's growing, will end up on our door. And we will not have the ability to be able to stop it. We'll go over here. Thank you.
Hi, thank you. My name is Luke, and I'm a senior international relations major and president of the Model United Nations Club here. And so my question undoubtedly has to do with foreign policy. It says on your website that you want to rebrand the war on terror to be the war on radical Islam. And so do you see Islam as the... Do you see radical Islam as the prime example of Islam at large? And if you were to be the commander-in-chief, how would your war on terror or war on radical Islam change from the current administration?
Great question. Thank you. The reason I say that we need to rebrand the war is because we need to be accurate as to who we are fighting. Are we fighting all terrorists? And the answer to that is clearly no. There are terrorists in other parts of the world that we are not engaged in and have no interest from a national security point of view of engaging in. The other issue is this a war on terrorism? Well, what is terrorism? Terrorism is a military tactic. Can you be at war against a military tactic? Well, that would say that FDR would have stood up in December 7, 1941 and say, we are going to war against kamikazes, or we're going to war against Blitzkrieg, or we're going to war against those. You don't go to war against a military tactic. You go to war against what we have always gone to war against. We go to war against a virulent ideology that seeks to harm and destroy America. And what is motivating the people to do what they're doing? That's what you're at war against. You're not at war against their actions. You're at war against what is the genesis of the antipathy toward America. And so I think it's important that now we're 10 years into this war, and most Americans have no idea really who the enemy is. They just have not even a basic fundamental understanding of what radical Islam is. Your question is a good one. Does that mean we're at war against Islam? Of course not. But we're at war within an element of Islam that, frankly, is at war with Islam and with war with most Muslims. The people who are going to be most disadvantaged, who are going to be most effective, as we see in Iran. Most Iranians are not radical Islamists. In fact, most Iranians love America. And they've loved America for a long time. Why? Because we had the courage to go out and call their theocracy what it was, evil and a corruption, and that we were on their side. Yet they are being oppressed every day by these radicals. So, no, we're not at war with Islam. But we are at war with the radical elements, and we need to say to the people of Islam, the Islamic people, that they need to join the fight against the radical elements. And we are ready to help you in that regard. Go ahead.
If you're nominated as the Republican nominee, how do you plan on responding to the negative attacks that President Obama will use against you in the general election for your stances on homosexuality and abortion?
The question is, for those who may not hear it, because I had trouble hearing it, so maybe you did. How am I going to respond to the negative attacks from President Obama against my positions on same-sex marriage and abortion?
Well, it's very interesting because the other candidates in this race have the same position I have on these issues. At least that's what they say. Right now, they have the same positions I have on these issues. And so, whoever the Republican candidate is, we have these radical positions that marriage should be between a man and a woman. How radical is that? I'll tell you how radical it is. The Ninth Circuit this week ruled that there is no rational basis for anyone to believe that marriage should just be between a man and a woman. There is no rational basis. Do you understand what that means? That means you are completely irrational. That's what it means. You are irrational if you think that marriage should only be between... You have no reason, this is what they said, the only reason you could possibly have to believe marriage should be only between men and women is that because you are a bigot and you are a hater. That's what they said. Read the case. And by the way, they're not the first ones to have said it. So, again, where is the tolerance? Right? Where's the tolerance? It says that if you have a different point of view, you can be rational. No. See, they can't allow you. Because if you're rational, then they have to deal with you. So they discard you. They just say, well, it's beyond the realm of reason. You're obviously just haters and we're not even going to talk to you. Right. This is the way the left operates. They won't sit and reason. They can't listen to all of the reasons that marriage has been between a man and a woman for centuries and why it has an intrinsic good to society. They dismiss those arguments as purely puff to hide your bigotry. That's what they believe. They won't reason. You see, the left is really about the death of reason. They always say that it's about reason, but it's not. It's about the death of reason. And so, I'm not surprised that you will see this president and the left go after all of whoever the Republican nominee is going to get hammered. Here's the difference. You see, the other Republican nominees, well, they don't talk about these issues very much. They're not particularly comfortable talking about them. Now, someone suggests they're not comfortable talking about them because, well, it's just not their sweet spot and they just don't want to talk about it. Well, you know, I don't know. My thinking is when you run for President of the United States, you should be pretty fluent on all the issues, not just the ones you care about. Or maybe some have suggested it's because, well, they may say that this is what they believe in because, well, this is what they need to say in order to get to win the primary. But it's not necessarily what they really believe. Well, in either event, whether they're simply uncomfortable with the issue at hand or whether they don't really believe what they say they're going to believe, what they believe, if you were someone who is a voter who may not agree with me on those issues or agree with any of us on those issues, who are you going to feel more comfortable with? You're going to vote for someone that you at least think understands the issues, can articulate their position, and is being truthful with what they believe, or someone who is none of those things? And so I happen to believe that it's an advantage when you're running for President of the United States, you're running for a position of leadership. And the one quality that is most important to folks in America is they want to believe that the president believes what he believes and is trustworthy. We sort of got to wrap up, so I will close with this. I talk a lot about the Declaration of Independence. I talk about the importance of that document. At the end of that document, there's a phrase. Our founders pledged their lives, their fortune, and their sacred honor. And they did so when it actually meant all those things. Because when they signed it, the chance of them being successful in this revolution was pretty close to zero. And they were willing to do something bold for you.
Well, I'm not asking you to pledge your lives, although I thank God every day. There are people who put the uniform on in the U.S. military and go out and do that every single day. To pledge your fortune, although if you want to go to my website, richandrew.com, but I am asking you to put your honor on the line. Your honor. Because you are a steward, you are stewards of a great inheritance. You have been honored by your ancestors, the people here from Tulsa, people from Oklahoma, the people from this country have given you the honor of being an American. And it is your obligation to be great stewards, to pass on to the next generation an America that is at least as great, as free, as proper, prosperous, and safe as the country that you were given. That's what this election is about. And I hope you take on that challenge and do your duty. Thank you and God bless.
Sponsored by the ORU College Republicans. This event has been presented as an academic and educational opportunity for our campus, region, state, and nation. ORU neither supports nor opposes candidates for public office, and the opinions expressed are those of the candidate and not those of ORU. All recognized candidates for the office of President of the United States in November 2012 election are invited to appear at ORU. We look forward to seeing you again at our next opportunity to host such a session. Thank you.